Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Week. It's the 18th day of July, 2014. Friday on the front porch, on the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where we've lived for the last, 10 years or so. And it's where we hope to be for another 10 or 20 or who knows what. You, at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, of course, you can find entrance to the chat room, which I, on this tired, bedraggled, worn-out old production machine, am trying to enter even as we speak. I'll be along in a minute, gang. Sorry I'm a couple of minutes late getting to the microphone itself. I was on my way back from Beckley. It's been rather of a busy day. Doctor's appointment, going over blood work. Maybe those of you who follow my Twitter feed at Bob Kincaid probably saw the photograph earlier today. And it's on my Facebook page, too, Bob Kincaid. Probably saw the photograph earlier today of the chart in the examining room of, I think it's the endocrine system, and then there was another thing that was maybe some cross-section model of a lung, and there was a box of latex-free gloves. You know, things you expect to see in the doctor's office. Except for, and then, you know, placed by the Gideons, the Holy Bible. So, I don't know if it was there in case you needed to look up a cure or how to deal with a demon or what happens if your patient comes in, says his name's Lot, and he's been having sex with his daughters. I don't know. I don't know what the Bible was there for. But it was off-putting, to say the least, and that led me to think that we need a charity out there. Stop it. I hate it when audio starts. Dadgummit. But anyway, we need a charity out there that will place Qurans and Rig Vedas and Sutras and the Popol Vuh and the Egyptian Book of the Dead and, I mean, if we're gonna have the Bible in a doctor's office, let's make sure that everybody's comfortable. Maybe the Bhagavad Gita, as Luda pointed out on my Facebook page. I mean, let's be equal opportunity here. Let's not kid ourselves either. Yeah, oh, right. Todd in the chat room noting, belly demons, Bob. Well, you know, you eat enough of those gas station chili dogs, and you too can have belly demons. Chili dogs bark at night, man. So where are we this evening? Let's see. Good evening, chat room. As I mentioned earlier, Anatole has joined us already, as has John and Jug of Punch and Kathy and me, Gimp, and Sergi and Todd, and of course, inveterate, indefatigable Horn chat room moderator Sparky is in there riding herd on the whole affair. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Sure. That's where the PayPal button is. And we started the program very optimistically yesterday evening. We only had an $85 fundraising goal. And bang! Darn it. We got a little bit of help, and thank you very much for it, but we find ourselves this evening, instead of our regular $150 fundraising goal, it's closer to $200. It's $195, actually. So there's that. But we need to, if possible, if at all possible, end the week to the good. And that means, you know, 10 folks at at 20 bucks, 20 folks at 10 bucks, 2 folks at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, any combination there any of the above to get us to where we need to be. Still feeling really icky. And that's probably not even the right word. I'm just disgusted over the Russian-enabled terrorists who shot down the passenger airliner. And it got worse today because a little bit of detail began coming out about the passenger manifest. Some of the leading researchers into HIV were aboard that aircraft. So the bloodthirsty monsters who pressed the button on that missile system, who were enabled, likely enabled by Vladimir Putin, well, they may have set back HIV research for a generation. And if you know, if you deal with the disease itself, or if you know someone who does, that is more than a little bit discouraging. That is infuriating. But the people who think that problems are solved by murdering civilians, well, they don't much care. Oh, speaking of civilians, the rate of Hamas terrorists to civilians who have thus far been slaughtered in Israel's war on Gaza, it's pretty high. The wounded are up over 1,000. As I was driving along, I heard a story about some little girls in brightly colored pajamas, you know, oranges, pinks, yellows, who were taken out by the Israeli Defense Forces. Some defense when you're blowing away little girls in pajamas. Because, of course, we all know that Hamas often disguises itself as a little girl wearing brightly colored pajamas. It's sickening. And it's just, I'm sorry, it just kind of crawls all over me. A note coming in from our good friend Harry in Baltimore regarding the conversation last night with 2nd Congressional District Independent candidate Ed Rabel. Harry writes, I realize many of your listeners may have written you about your discussion with Ed Rabel last night, and there were a good number of, and it was received quite well. Harry says, but I'd like to express just a few brief thoughts about Ed Rabel myself, if I may. You may, Harry, you may. One, I remembered his voice immediately from my adolescent and young adult TV news watching, and I had a mental association to a time when television reporters actually provided their audience with news, even the most uncomfortable or horrific news. But we, the audience, knew that we were getting most of the truth, if only because we knew that reporters like Ed Rabel were doing their jobs honestly. Two, as I was wandering around the internet last night looking for old photos or text about Ed Rabel, I came across two intriguing factoids. The first is that in a November 4th, 1985 New York magazine, the brassier magazine of New York City, cover story by television critic Tony Schwartz, Ed Rabel's personal integrity is accidentally on display. The cover story is called Inside CBS, Turmoil and Takeover Talk, and in a part of the article about CBS News, there's a discussion of how some of CBS's news stars were leaving. Now remember, this is 1985, or had left for NBC News or other new employers. The article reports specifically that Ed Rabel, quote, a veteran CBS correspondent, unquote, was ordered by CBS to move from Washington, D.C. to Dallas. When Mr. Rabel balked, CBS told him to take the assignment or leave. So he left and went to NBC. 3. The second factoid about Ed Rabel that I wanted to mention, because he was a newsman of such integrity, is that Ed Rabel is mentioned by name twice in a brilliant essay by the novelist and essayist David Foster Wallace. Some of you may have read Infinite Jest. I did. And it was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. And it's a pity David Foster Wallace is no longer among the click. David Foster Wallace, Harry continues, wrote an essay in 1993 about television that is called A Pluribus Pluram. A Unibus Pluram, Television and U.S. Fiction. And a lot of the essay is about TV's reputation in more recent years for irony. Wallace gives as one example Ed Rabel's documentary coverage for CBS, a CBS special of United Fruit's Crimes in Guatemala. Wallace focuses on how the documentary smoothly and ironically cuts between a sleazy spokesperson for United Fruit who claims there is no oppression and vivid images with no voiceover of sickly Guatemalan children and murdered union organizers. Later in the essay, when discussing Voltaire, Wallace says, "The Voltaire of Candide, for instance, uses a bisensuous irony that would do Ed Rabel proud." So it seems that David Foster Wallace, who was a gifted observer of U.S. society and culture, was impressed by Ed Rabel. Harry also enjoyed my little chat with Mike Malloy last night toward the end of his program, and I really do appreciate the opportunity just to update folks there, the truth seekers, about what's going on back here in the sacrifice zone. Noting what I discussed with Mike, Harry writes, "You may be right that there is some kind of psychological Stockholm syndrome-like process that prevented West Virginians, for example, from protesting in front of the state capitol after the Freedom Industries disaster. Even though West Virginians are too often singled out for not organizing themselves better, politically speaking, and, you know, that's as an aside, that's odd because once upon a time West Virginians were incredibly well organized politically. It had to do with the heyday of the unions, among other things. Harry continues, "I see a similar passive malaise in other places, including my new city of Baltimore. Now, I suppose you could say that Baltimore is another region with lots of poverty and little leadership, and poverty itself makes everything much harder to accomplish." Harry mentions a book called that you might want to look into called Scarcity, Why Having Too Little Means So Much, by Mullanathan, an economist at Harvard, and Shafir, a psychologist at Princeton. He says, the book's theory is really quite intriguing, and this is worth thinking about, maybe even discussing in our Extraordinary Ordinary People roundtable that takes place on this here Friday on the Front Porch. By the way, if you want to participate in Friday on the Front Porch, all you got to do is get yourself a little old Skype handle, which means getting Skype, and hopefully having some decent means of doing audio, and sending a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc on Skype. And you, too, can be part of the Ordinary Extraordinary Americans roundtable that is Friday on the Front Porch in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Anyway, Harry says, the book's theory is really quite intriguing, if not constructively stimulating. Doing their own research studies and also drawing on lots of other research, the two professor authors propose that the trap of poverty is not only about having too little money and all of the many daily practical consequences of that. Rather, poverty also, or perhaps even more significantly, tends to involve not having enough cognitive or mental energy to make constructive, foresightful, and prudent decisions every day or week. The authors call this a cognitive bandwidth problem. And they argue, for example, that certain activities, like a bank where the impoverished account holder as a very small bank account makes the account holder wait longer to have a wage check clear, imposes an additional cognitive tax on the poor that middle class and wealthy people don't have imposed on them, or is something they can easily circumvent. The authors also strenuously argue that, as noted above, if government programs really want to help the poor, then all of the forms and all of the procedures should be made simpler and less onerous. For example, even the application forms or the instruction booklets should be briefer and written in simpler and clearer language. The NPR story, for example, shows an even more egregious kind of cognitive tax. The NPR reporter indicated that when their subject, a young single mother in the New York area, felt compelled to apply for state welfare payments, she later concluded it was one of the worst decisions she could have made. Why? Because the welfare program required her to attend every single day of the work week an all-day job readiness seminar. But the NPR reporter, to her credit, explained that this program was a sham and that few, if any, people ever got jobs because they were present at these daily seminars. Moreover, Professor Shafir commented that he had been told by a source that these seminars were made a requirement of New York's welfare program specifically so that only the most motivated, i.e. desperate welfare applicants, would receive payments. And that reminded me, Harry did, that reminded me of the story coming out of Georgia from some months or maybe a year or so back of the head of the Georgia Department of Health and Human Services or Resources or whatever they call it, whose job is to see that aid benefits are fairly and equitably shared out. She, in turn, is, of course, a God-fearing, Bible-believing, right-wing, upstanding, birther, deather, tenther, booger-eater Republican. And she understood the doing of her job, meaning that she was supposed to keep everybody off of the welfare rolls. And toward that end, she reminded all of the caseworkers under her supervision that they were to make sure that no one gets benefits. How did she do this? She placed zero brand candy bars on all of their desks. Man, ain't this a great country or what? And so, too, with these miserable job readiness seminar programs like what Harry mentions in New York, brought to you courtesy of, do you remember it? What was it? 1995, was it? Some of us were around. Welfare reform, where the Republican Congress passed it, and Bill Clinton said, well, sure, I'll be happy to sign that. And did. And the manifest harm from Republican-created Bill Clinton enabled welfare reform continues to reverberate throughout our culture. Harry continues and says, I myself have come to believe that these powerful right-wing people in government or funding the right-wing politicians are deliberately making it more and more difficult for workers and other less powerful people to create social or civic movements. That is, I have come to believe that most of the 99% is suffering from cognitive bandwidth problems and burdensome cognitive taxes. I would like to think that Marx would agree, although he might describe it primarily in historical process terms, such as in his statement that under capitalism all that is solid melts into air, or that capitalist production begets its own negation. This is all to say that although I share your frustration that not even 1% of the 300,000 people who were poisoned by freedom industries were willing to spend an evening protesting at the state capitol, I think that many of the people these days are suffering from a large bundle of small cognitive taxes that deplete their mental energy and motivation as well as their economic resources. Damn straight. I think Harry says much more eloquently and elegantly what I have argued time after time in the past, that it is hard as hell being poor. It is damn difficult. And a Jamie Dimon or a Kenneth Adelson or any of these Wall Street hedge fund types wouldn't last a week poor. Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd were, of course, in that magnificent movie, Trading Places. And it was funny. But it did sort of speak to an underlying truth. It is hard to be broke. You have to scramble harder to make what little you have go further. The poor in this country, not that the 1% know or give a tinker's damn, are more innovative and more creative in trying to meet their narrowly defined needs than Bill Gates or Warren Buffett will ever be. Or that Saudi prince who owns 49% of Fox News. The poor in this country make decisions that would make a Wall Street board president faint. How do you choose, for instance, between going to your crappy minimum wage job or taking your sick child to the doctor? When not going to your crappy minimum wage job means that you'll once again be out there looking for another crappy minimum wage job, and not taking your sick child to the doctor means your sick child will get sicker. The 1% knows nothing of this. The 1% knows nothing of one of our elders' choices between food and medicine. Nothing. They know nothing. Anyway, Harry continues. This is why I believe so many people still spend their entire evenings watching TV. The owner of my house, whatever other problems he has that are his alone, is also looking to escape. Completely, every evening, from his patients and colleagues. He's not a doctor, but in the medical field. David Foster Wallace insightfully noted in his essay about TV, quote, "For the television screen affords access only one way, a psychic ball check valve. We can see them, they can't see us. We can relax unobserved as we ogle." I happen to believe this is why television also appeals so much to lonely people, to voluntary shut-ins. Every lonely human I know watches way more than the average U.S. 6 hours a day. Wow, that's the U.S. average? The U.S. average is 6 hours of television a day? What if the U.S. average alcohol consumption was to drink for 6 hours every day? What if the U.S. fat consumption rate was 6 hours a day consuming fat? We'd treat it like a crisis, wouldn't we? David Foster Wallace continues, "The lonely, like the fictional Love One Way Watching. For lonely people are usually lonely not because of hideous deformity or odor or obnoxiousness. In fact, there exist today social and support groups for persons with precisely these features. Lonely people tend rather to be lonely because they decline to bear the emotional costs associated with being around other humans. They are allergic to people. People affect them too strongly." Wow. Later on in his essay, when trying to figure why the editors at the New York Times devoted most of a Sunday magazine to the phenomenon of television and inner machinations of the TV industries, and also when wondering why there is so much popular and academic writing about TV, Wallace concludes that educated middle-class people have a kind of love-hate relationship with television that is ultimately not focused on that which is truly meaningful. It's like people who despise, I mean big time, long-term despise their spouses or jobs, but won't split up or quit. Critical complaint degenerates quickly into plain whining. The fecund question about U.S. television is no longer whether there are some truly nasty problems in it here, but rather what on earth's to be done about them. On this question, pop critics are mute. Think about all the essays about, and I'm not criticizing anybody's likes or dislikes here, but think about all the digital ink that has been spilled over the relative merits of one episode or the next of Game of Thrones or Mad Men, both of which are very well produced. Contrarywise, how much ink has been spent digitally or physically on examining why it is that we find such things fascinating? On the one hand, Game of Thrones is one slaughter after another, with interspersed with a little bit of incest here and a little rape there, and maybe once in a while a dragon. Khaleesi's dragons. Even I know that, and I don't have television. Or Mad Men, which recreates very convincingly a very male-dominated world in which sexism and discrimination run rampant. Harry says, this is all to say I think we have a lot of cognitive taxes today on civic activity or social organizing, even in the comfortable middle-class part of the population that should be out protesting for an evening, writing strong letters, or making outraged phone calls. This dysfunction, I sense, is being ratcheted up by the right-wing 1% greedy and fanatical. Their goal, it seems to me, is indeed to make the rest of the population feel depleted and impotent in the way that Marx predicted in a more purely economic sense. Wow. And of course, again, more elegantly and eloquently stated, Harry reminds me of the times that I have said, because I remember the hoorah years of the Bush administration and the weirdo wingnuts hollering, "Get over it!" about the theft of the election. And from 1980-something forward, Rush Limbaugh screaming that there are no liberals left. My friends, there are no liberals in America. They're disgusting. And what we attempt to do here is disprove that lie. And create a community where we all feel safe and comfortable talking amongst ourselves. And then this by way of conclusion from Harry. I have come to believe that it is time for all of us to be working towards an entirely new societal structure, which means possibly to stop watching TV, to stop doing our normal grind if we have one, and to realize that none of it will survive. None of us will survive if we all decide just to keep our heads down and do nothing. I really fear we are in danger of a fascist-leaning politician coming along, manipulating the processes of power, and being viewed by the populace as a savior in a way similar to how was received back in the 1930s. As you know, there was a lot of social science research and writing, some of it famous, in the aftermath of the Second World War regarding how it was possible that a national population becomes so passive and just let a Hitler decide for them what their society should be like. I fear we are nearing this kind of passivity here in the U.S. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, indeed. By way of expansion on Harry's idea, I might note that in a recent poll for preference for 2016's Republican presidential nominee, the guy who came in first was the Reverend Pastor Brother Mike Huxterby. Elmer Gantry with a comb over. And, wrapping it all up, Harry says, I think the present capitalism-saturated societal structure is dead, with no chance of reviving it, and probably no reason to revive it. Moreover, somebody's or something has killed off too much of our population's famous civic spirit. I'm definitely not the first person to say this, but I don't think that Alexis de Tocqueville would recognize the country we are now in July of 2014. Yeah. So it is 25 minutes before the hour. Let's check the rest of the mailbag real quick. Thanks going out to Sal for getting us started this evening. We are now $190 away from meeting our fundraising goal for the evening. Sergi writing in, yes, Bob, it's true, 40 hours a week. According to the New York Daily News and Nielsen, the average American watches about 40 hours of TV a week. Frankly, I'd have no qualms with this if people's viewing was wholesome, but most of this is crap like Honey Boo Boo whatever, mindless caveman games, and other assorted crap. Signed, Sergi, boob tube minus the boobs because I'm gay, Kyle. Look, even Honey Boo Boo Child, if that's what takes you, if that's what gives you your cow gone take me away moment, cool. But by the same token, if you like a little glass of brown liquor on the rocks, a couple of times a week, or maybe one each evening, or whatever, cool. But if you like 40 hours of Honey Boo Boo and Toddlers and Tiaras and America's Got No Talent and Dancing with the Two Left Footed and all of the, and it's just ever present, that's a problem. Just like if your glass of brown liquor on the rocks of an evening becomes a bottle of brown liquor chugged from the jug every evening. Bless their cranky, cantankerous, argumentative hearts, the ancient Greeks were right. All things in moderation, nothing to excess. Except moderation. Excessive moderation. I don't know. Maybe excessive moderation's a problem. Marty pointing out, but Bob, according to Ted Nugent, if you're poor, it's your own fault because you're stupid. 6 hours of TV per day. I hope that factors in Super Bowl Sunday. No, that's just your view. That's your viewing work week, according to Sergi. Marty. Wowzer. Ron and Raleigh wrote earlier. Subject line: another nail. Some time ago, I wrote that I was so done with President Not Sure, I didn't think I could be more disgusted by his weak-kneed kowtowing. However, with his reaction to the murder of the Bakir brothers, I'm so angry I could spit nails. President Not Sure came to the podium and essentially dismissed the intentional killing by saying that Israel has the right to self-defense. So far in this latest exercise of Israeli self-defense, there have been 277 Palestinians killed to one Israeli. I would like to know what the ratio would have to be before the tired self-defense meme would cease to have any believability. Yeah. Ron commends us all to a website called If Americans Knew. .org. If Americans knew what every American needs to know about Israel-Palestine. ...131 Israeli children have been killed by Palestinians and 1,581 Palestinian children have been killed by Israelis since September 29, 2000. 1,111 Israelis and at least 7,149 Palestinians have been killed since September 29, 2000. 8,550 Israelis and 58,105 Palestinians have been injured since September 29, 2000. During fiscal year 2013, the U.S. is providing Israel with at least $8.5 million per day in military aid, and of course, $0 in military aid to the Palestinians. Lots of bar graphs there. If Americans knew. .org. Luda, with an observation, 6 hours? What makes you think Americans don't average 6 hours of eating and drinking per day? America can't put down the Burger King while there are smokers to vilify on their high horses. Via Twitter. Haley says, I doubt it. I watch 4 to 6 hours of TV a week most weeks. And this includes my PBS station's airings of BBC World News. You can generally spot the people who don't watch a hell of a lot of television. They tend to be a little bit more engaged in their own world and the world around them. So let's take a break. Let me pop in the gym. Man, great crowd shaping up in the chat room. Happy birthday to Sergi. Todd, Stockton, Larry, Sergi, Mr. Gibson, me, Gimp, Kathy, Jugapunch, John, Jan, C.A. Sykes, Bean, Anatole, and of course, moderators Lottie and Sparky. And if you've never been to the chat room, jump on in. It really is quite a rollicking good time. Mr. Gibson pointing out, I don't watch television either. It gives me gallstones. Yeah, it makes my Knuten valve vibrate. All right, then. Yeah, a little break. And by the way, if you want to get in on, let's try to make this a little more equitable here. Since we cannot, this is Friday on the Front Porch. And since we cannot use the traditional call-in phone line, 304-574-8178, inside the Horn Molloy Skype chat group. Why don't, if you've got something on your mind, and we had people calling into the very end of the program last night, if you're out there and you still got something to say, you're welcome to jump in with your observations, your comment, whatever. On the phone line, 304-574-8178. And then maybe around the top of the hour or so, we will go to the Skype group, the Ordinary Extraordinary Americans Roundtable. And folks from other parts of the planet, too. You're welcome as well. Skype works that way. We have $190 worth of fundraising to do. We have bills waiting to be paid. Good old Appalachian Power with their clean coal electricity. Liars. They got themselves a rate increase recently. That was a real hoot. Anyway, take a break. This is Conversation Radio. Listener supported. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is for all the lonely people thinking that life has passed them by. Don't give up until you drink from the silver cup and ride that highway in the sky. This is for all the single people thinking that love has left them dry. Don't give up until you drink from the silver cup. You never know until you try. Well, I'm on my way. Yes, I'm back to stay. Well, I'm on my way back home. Get it.
An appropriate little bumper for the moment, of course. America and an AM radio pop classic, Lonely People. Friday on the Front Porch has arrived here on the Horn, and we got a lot of stuff to go through. We kind of clear things out on Friday. And I can't just we can't just blow past this. You remember? Do you remember the right-wing titanic intellect who is a member of the legislature in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, Stan? Senator Brandon Smith? Remember how he said specifically that the temperature on Mars and Earth are the same? You know, because he said that. As you sit there in your chair with your data, we sit up here in ours with our data and our constituents and stuff behind us. I don't want to get into the debate about climate change, but I'll simply point out that I think that in academia, we all agree that the temperature on Mars is exactly as it is here. That's the quote. The temperature on Mars is exactly as it is here. Nobody will dispute that. Yet there are no coal mines on Mars. There are no factories on Mars that I'm aware of. Yeah, I mean, that's the quote. That's the real deal. Well, it seems that Senator Brandon Smith... Mars, having realized that and having apparently received a number of communications from people, even from Kentucky, Stan, who were upset to know that an absolute certifiable moron was in the state house. This one's a pencil neck. Well, upon being contacted by same, he was apparently not amused. Leo Weekly and I don't know what it is, but that's where this comes from. But no, he doubled down. They always double down from his Twitter feed, Brandon Smith, super genius. I like the sound of that. Wile E. Coyote, super genius. Give up now, rabbit, for I obviously have a vastly superior intellect. Hashtag clarify. Climate shift we see on Earth comparable to those occurring on other planets in our solar system. Hashtag comments taken out of context. I read the whole darn thing. There's no taking out of context. He said the temperature on Mars is the same as the temperature on Earth. But no, like I said, he doubled down. One Kentuckian had written to him to point out that, no, the temperature on Mars is not the same as the temperature on Earth. And so Senator Doofus writes back, "It amazes me that you have no idea what I actually said. Weren't at the meeting, yet bought into this bogus quote posted about me so entirely that you took time to actually send me an email. Really? I have some lakefront property you might be interested in. Please do not kick yourself for being duped by this. 56 other people in the world did as well." What does that phrase mean? I have some lakefront property to sell you? This guy really is Atne Ute Aitbre if you one what I eme, isn't he? There's lots of people with lakefront property to sell because there are lakes! None of them are on Mars. Just saying. So then the Kentucky voter wrote back and sent him the YouTube video of himself saying this stuff. So in an effort, in a desperate effort to dig back, to dig out, he doubled down again. "I made the point that it is my opinion that something bigger than one industry, coal, is affecting our planet. I went on to use the example that both Earth and Mars have experienced temperature changes. The clip you saw only shows enough of the overall debate to make the viewer believe I'm saying something different. I'm not asking you to believe me. That's entirely up to you. However, as always, there's more to this story that deserves to be told." The man who said the temperature on Mars is the same as the temperature on Earth can't even admit that it ain't. And dude wrote a freaking book. Let's see. "The clip you saw only shows enough of the overall debate to make the viewer believe I'm saying something different. I'm not asking you to believe me. That's entirely up to you." The meeting in question was held so the Secretary of Energy and Environment Cabinet could explain to committee members the impact of the newly proposed Environmental Protection Agency regulations. Say this was a heavily attended gathering by the media is an understatement. In fact, every major state media outlet was present. Curiously, they never reported on this story. Why? Because all the informed parties understood the context of the conversation, as I have been making this point for over 5 years. For 5 years, he's been saying that the temperature on Earth is the same as the temperature on Mars. Maybe nobody wanted to repeat that for just because it's embarrassing to even type it. Either all the legitimate reporters in this meeting missed my comments, or this whole ordeal is a diversionary anti-coal measure to keep people from asking what the secretary had to say. Oh, God, it's an anti... If we say that the temperature of the Earth is not the same as the temperature of Mars, it's anti-coal. Meanwhile, meanwhile, Brandon Smith saying that nobody else reported on it. Leo Weekly points out, no one else reported on the Mars statements in Kentucky except Leo, and three times for the Courier Journal, and two times for the Lexington Herald Leader, and public radio. They are geniuses. Oh, by the way, Brandon Smith alleges himself to be the owner of something called Mohawk Energy. Once again, appropriating a Native American people for profiteering purposes, but we'll just blow past that because it seems to happen all the time with right-wing idiots. Well, I went digging around looking for it, and I found one Mohawk Energy that does like offshore drilling or offshore drilling support. I was guessing that was not Mr. Brandon Smith from Kentucky Stan. And then, bing, there it was, popped up on a map just a few miles from the West Virginia state line in eastern Kentucky, the Mohawk Mine. Hint, they're not mining marshmallows, they're mining coal. Yeah. So the coal guy thinks everything that anything that doesn't bow and scrape and declare that coal is the best thing since sliced bread should of necessity, well, it just is anti-coal. Are we clear? Oh, what else? I don't know about you, but I try to make moral choices with the few dollars that we have here. And so you might be interested, I suspect you do as well. So you might be interested to know, I mean, there's any number of chain pharmacy-type stores, CVS, Rite Aid, Walgreens. The Guardian reporting that Walgreens is getting ready to skedaddle, to scamper. Walgreens is based in Illinois, but according to the CTW Investment Group, which represents, according to The Guardian, union pension funds, with about $250 billion in investments, they think they have reason to believe that Walgreens is getting ready to skedaddle to Switzerland to dodge its taxes, all part of their takeover of something called Alliance Boots. CTW Investment is asking the Securities and Exchange Commission to investigate a rule violation on Walgreens' part. CTW claims Walgreens executives had private meetings with analysts and hedge funds where they talked about restructuring the company's Alliance Boots acquisition so that they could engage in what's called a tax inversion that would let it move Walgreens headquarters and escape the corporate tax rate in the United States, which is already laughable. This is in the name of $783 million in taxes dodged in the first year the first year, one, as in one, of tax inversion. So it might bear in mind, and maybe you can walk in and tell them that you're going to vote with your dollars, you're going to make moral choices with your dollars, and you're not coming back to Walgreens. Not telling you to do that, just suggesting that you might ponder whether or not that might be an ethical choice. Precisely, Stockton Larry. You mean because money? Because money. Oof. Yeah, nice comment coming in from a buddy Asa in Vancouver. Who's got time to watch TV when you've got the horn to listen to? Precisely. Oh, and one last thing. If you didn't hear my conversation with Mike Malloy last night, what I called in to tell him about was that in the midst of all the international horror, see Gaza, CF, Ukraine, it's worth remembering that we have a few of our own still, and that we have a tendency to forget some of them. Here in Appalachia, we're very easy to forget, and that assumes anybody remembers in the first place. They have torn apart enough of the old Freedom Industries tank farm that leaked at least 10,000 gallons of methylchlorohexane methanol and God knows what else into the Elk River about a mile or two upstream from West Virginia American Water's corporate water intakes. You remember that, January 9th, 2014. I couldn't seem to talk about much of anything else for about 2-3 weeks. Well, they've inspected the tanks now that they've torn them down. And there was so much corrosion in the steel of the tanks the Charleston Gazette, Lydia Newsom writing, says that the tanks showed multiple corrosion points. There was a particularly large hole in the floor of tank 395, and more investigation will be necessary to determine the exact causes and possible duration of the leak. In other words, the poison that was known to be leaking as of January 9th and was suspected to have been leaking beforehand, there's no way of knowing how long it was leaking. There's no way of knowing how long people were consuming in coal industry poison before anybody bothered to warn them, and even after warning them, didn't even shut off the water. The story by Lydia Newsom at WVGazette.com refers to an individual by the name of Karen Ireland. She lives in the Edgewood neighborhood of Charleston. She said she became sick soon after taking a shower on January the 6th, which is 3 days before the leak was noticed. Some people saying, when I was reading about it on Facebook, some people saying that they've been smelling it since Christmas 2013. But Karen Ireland became sick after taking a shower on January the 6th. Then she got a deep cough, chills, nausea. And eventually those things would be associated with exposure to crude methylchlorohexane methanol. Although remember that GERT, Governor Earl Ray Tomlin, wanted to make sure that everybody knew they had the flu And, of course, he ran to the nearest podium to say, I just want everybody to know that this is not about coal. There ain't a coal mine anywhere near that tank farm. No, but they sure transported that methylchlorohexane methanol to a whole bunch of coal prep operations. This is a quote, again, from the news article. Ireland is experienced with new preliminary reports from the Chemical Safety Board that indicate that the leak at a tank at the Freedom Industries facility was likely caused by widespread corrosion and may have been entering the Elk River before initial reports January 9th. Which means that West Virginia American Water just took it in and pumped it out and, eh. As long as the West Virginia American Water Company stock price remains solid, all is good, right? Because that's what matters. That's what counts. Oof. In regard to the Walgreens story, a note from Randy. Randy says Costco pharmacy medications can cost as little as 1/40th of the price at chain store pharmacies, according to Consumer Reports. One example was a cancer medication that cost $11 at Costco, but $440 at CVS. If you have a Costco, you're lucky. If you do not, you're me and everybody else in the state of West Virginia, because we don't have any Costcos. We do got a Sam's Club or two. Really? All right, let's, are we good to go? I don't know. Let me check here. Trying to find out where we are with Friday on the Front Porch. We'll know in a minute. Oh, and this dovetails nicely with some of the things that Harry was saying in his note. Jessica pointed out to me via email earlier, and I find this absolutely fascinating. I love sciencey stuff. There's a new scientific report out, and it is in the field of cognitive science. In fact, in the journal Cognitive Science, it is called Judgments About Fact and Fiction by Children from Religious and Non-Religious Backgrounds. The authors are Kathleen Corriveau, Eva Chen, and Paul Harris. And they used a series of questions coming from Bible stories and fairy tales, and they found that children generally can determine whether characters in a narrative are real or fictional based on references to what is described as fantastical elements within the narrative. Things like a sword that protects you from danger every time. Children can do this. They can tell reality from non-reality. However, if the child is exposed to religion via, and this is the author's language, Children with exposure to religion via church attendance, parochial schooling, or both judged characters in religious stories to be real. By contrast, children with no such exposure judged them to be pretend, just as they had the characters in fairy tales. You know, Jacob, Esau, Lot, Abraham, Adam. Balaam and his ass, the one that talked. Fiction. And a child that has not been raised religiously can tell the difference between magical, fictional characters and real ones. Religial. Less to. By way of broader explanation, children with exposure to religion judged many characters in fantastical but not explicitly religious stories to also be real. The equivalent of being incapable of differentiating between Mark Twain's character, Tom Sawyer, and an account of George Washington's life. This kind of goes back to the story about the Holocaust denial in the Rialto Unified School District in California. Children were given excerpts from some history and excerpts from some speculative Bible-believing websites, and they were offered as equally valid. And some of the children said, "Well, I believe them people that said that there weren't no Holocaust." God forbid we should ever actually start teaching children reality instead of fantasy. All right, well, nobody wanted to use the traditional phone lines, 3045, that line, no. So we're gonna crank up Friday on the Front Porch. And get the roundtable going with the Horn Molloy Skype chat group, the Ordinary Extraordinary Americans, and other countries welcome as well. We'll get it all fired up momentarily, and remember, we're trying to raise $190 this evening, and we have Sal standing alone, doing his best. He needs some company. 19 folks, $10. 38 folks, $5. 19's a prime number, isn't it? That's why I'm having trouble. Anyway, let's see if we can take care of this before and end the week okay. This is Conversation Radio, Friday on the Front Porch. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Peace.
Minutes past the hour, Friday on the front porch on the horn. I'm Bob Kincaid, and well, we've got the beginnings of our Horn Molloy Skype chat group gathered together admirably and excellently moderated by Sparky. Good evening, Sparky.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
I'm staying cool today.
Not quite so blazing out there today.
Oh no, only I'm going to be 97.
Oh, stop it. And bone dry, right?
Oh, yeah.
How are the tomatoes?
Coming on like crazy. I can't eat them all.
But you're damn sure willing to try, right?
I ate as many as I can. I gave away a bunch to a friend of my dad's today.
Are you gonna can or anything?
No, I never learned to can.
What a great time to start.
We still got the canning equipment, but I don't know.
It's actually pretty fun, and, you know, along about February, when you think you're never going to see a decent tomato again, crack open that last jar of tomatoes. It can be your salvation. It really can.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have with us, of course, Sergi. Good evening, Sergi.
Good evening, Bob.
How in the world are you? Happy birthday.
Well, thank you. I'm enjoying this cool weather before it starts burning up again. You know, Duncan was talking about it's only 97. We got an extremely rare July cold front come through, brought us a good amount of rain. Some areas, in fact, got too much rain. Some areas up in Denton County got as much as 11 inches of rain. This cold front came through, dumped a bunch of rain on us, and yesterday's high temperature was in the 70s. Today's high temperature's in the 80s. And that's almost unheard of.
So, how many revolutions around the planet are you now, Sergi?
22.
Dang. Congratulations and many happy returns. Hey, Larry, how are you this evening?
Hey, Bob, how are you?
Good, thanks. Good. Glad to see you in the group. John, good evening.
Hey, Bob.
What's happening? Anything?
No, not a whole lot.
Cool. Well, I'm sure we'll find something to cuss and discuss in a little bit. And, of course, Todd and Kath are with us.
Hi, Bob.
Sorry, I'm kind of cooling down my my corn whiskey here with some ice. I'm just getting ready for a good
lunch. I do love me the sound of ice tinkling in a glass. Nothing quite like it.
Well, it should be a good evening. That's all I got to say.
Anybody want to bring anything to the table before we jump in?
Oh, I just wanted to say something. I put out a request to our good friend Hernan in Argentina to do the YouTube of you and Mike chatting last night.
Oh, that'd be fun.
So hopefully he'll do that. I mean, he's done requests before.
Well, that was a fun conversation.
And I don't know if you noticed, but your conversation with Ed Rabel is up. Horse put it on YouTube.
Oh, wow. I need to get the link to that so that I can get that over to Ed.
I think it's on the Horn Facebook page for sure.
Okay. One of these days I'll understand how Facebook works. Sometimes I see what's on, I get notifications of what's there, and sometimes I don't.
Well, if you mention your name, you always get a notification. If you post something in the Horn group and then you put your name on there, you should get a notification on it.
Okay. Well, I will get that to Ed straight away. That's awesome. Thanks to Horst for doing that.
Mhm. And we've had more people joining the group all the time. I help moderate that too.
You are a man of many talents, Sparky.
Well, Betsy bestowed it on me.
Yeah, you're a bestowal away. You're a bestowal away. I don't necessarily want to drive this bus. If anybody's observed because otherwise I'm going to dive into the screaming well of horrors.
Are you going to go anymore on the Gaza Israel thing?
I hope not.
Okay, I won't bring it up then because it seems like I've been living it all my life.
Well, no, go ahead, please.
No, it just gets old to me because nothing ever gets settled. I mean, when we thought, when Carter got those two guys,
Begin and Arafat, or no,
yeah,
not Arafat. Sadat.
Sadat. To sign that agreement. I thought we were headed for something, but it just never changed. I mean, because, like Bill always likes to mention that my story of when we went on worldwide alert during the October 73 war. Because it just seems as there was always a war going on or somebody blowing something up over there. If it isn't Lebanon, it's something else.
Bob. Going back, and I'm reaching way back into the deep recesses of the mind here, but in deep history,
Hey, hey, Todd, I don't know if you have any control or not, but can you demodulate just a little bit? You're a little overdriven.
Is this any better?
Manifestly, yes.
Okay, thank you. Going back to one of the college history classes I had, weren't the Jewish people the first that could qualify themselves as actually having a quote-unquote portable God, meaning that their God did not actually live someplace? I mean, you had, and I'm sorry, the brain has gone away, but, you had Zeus living on Mount Olympus and, you know, other gods actually residing someplace, and people would go there, to pray or make their pilgrimage there. Weren't the Jews the first group of people to actually have a portable God, saying that their God was with them wherever they went?
I've never heard that. Of course, there's a difference between talking about the ancient Hebrew peoples and talking about today's Jewish people around the world, because after the kingdom period finally came, to the extent that it was even historical, there were two kingdoms, and that was Israel and Judah. And if I understand correctly, ever since then there's been this fascination, especially among various European types and their later American progeny, with the so-called lost tribes of Israel, because the kingdom of Israel was completely destroyed, and according to mythic history, they were the citizens or subjects thereof were scattered to the four winds. And so the only thing that remained were, I think, two of the tribes, and that was Judah, from whence we get the word Jewish. The ancient Hebrews are somewhat different from, and I'm probably way out of my depth here, but I like that concept of a portable God. But for me, far more important is that it is a brutal, some say Bronze Age, maybe Stone Age God. And what amazes me is that people can still, follow such. I mean, that's like following Zeus or any of the, but then again, we all know how I feel about religion. So, there you go.
Right. Same concept. And, I don't know. I'll give the obligatory. I apologize if I offend anybody, but looking at the amount of dead on each side that is currently over there, and with the incursion of the Israelis into Gaza and causing the evacuation of the folks that are near where the incursions are now, they're giving them their little pamphlets saying, get the hell out or you're going to die. But where do you go
when you're already packed in
to the dense, the most densely populated piece of land on Earth?
And it's a fair question. The border with Egypt is closed. The border with Israel is closed. And if you're living on the sixth floor and you get the phone call or the leaflet or the flyer saying, get out now, you've got 5 minutes before hell on earth yawns open before you in a place that is already hell on earth, what do you do? I mean, I was listening to NPR as I was driving around because I was a little late getting to the microphone today, and I apologize. But I was listening to NPR, and they're telling the story of a man is recounting his story of having children sent from one house to another because one house was deemed safer than the other, and in the house they were sent to, they got blown away.
Sad.
And I think that was the story where the guy was talking about these were all little girls wearing brightly colored pajamas. Now, how do you mistake them for Hamas? And I will brook no accusation of anti-Semitism.
I can't stand Holocaust denial, but butchery is butchery.
Yep, absolutely. And you know it, and it comes to me as I see it. Like I see, you keep pushing people into a tighter and tighter area, and eventually the fight or flight response takes over, and you no longer have the flight option. So you only have got to fight, and
with what?
It's just going to get worse.
And with what, Todd? With what? That was one of the things that was
sticks and stones.
Yeah, that was one of the things that was frustrating me about the coverage I was hearing on NPR. Fighting between Palestinians and Israelis today. Blah blah blah. It continued. Yada yada yada. Well, okay. I guess we can call it fighting between. It seems like the Israelis are doing all the fighting, and the Palestinians are doing all the dying.
Right.
I mean, when you've got helicopter gunships and guided missiles and smart bombs and dime weapons, and I don't know, have they gotten around to using the white phosphorus again? And you've got tanks and rocket launchers and boots on the ground and fighter jets courtesy of the United States, and the other side has sticks and stones.
You forgot drones, too.
Oh, dear God, there's drones? Did I miss the drones?
Israel's been building drones for many years. They sell them all over the world.
They have drones.
And the Palestinian. Okay, I mean, under the best scenario, the Palestinians have a bunch of crude homemade rockets that cannot be guided or directed to any target, and maybe they've got some RPGs and small arms. That's it. How is that an existential threat to the state of Israel?
Yeah, I think the proper term is something along the lines of a disproportional reaction or something like that.
Yeah, and then there's the notion of collective punishment, which is equally condemned allegedly by international law, but it seems like if Israel does it, it's okay.
What it seems to me to be is that I will give it to Israel that they are surrounded by hostile powers. However, okay, there's one thing to properly defend yourself and adequately defend yourself when you're surrounded by hostile powers. It's a whole nother thing to develop a full-on inferiority complex and, you know, completely swing too far. It's almost like a, you know, twist on the horseshoe effect where, you know, we're surrounded by all these extremists who hate us, so we're going to go to the other extreme. You know, but the other extreme turns out to be not so different from the supposedly opposite extreme, you know.
Yeah, well, but consider this, Sergi, if I may. The powers that surround Israel are state powers. Egypt, Syria, Lebanon, and then expanding into the wider Middle East, you know, Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Iran. Those are state powers. The Palestinians are people who are trapped within Israel. And they are stateless persons. They have no state to stand up for them. And the last, and you know, Egypt hangs them out to dry, Lebanon hangs them out to dry, Jordan hangs them out to dry. And so they are utterly bereft.
Yeah, I mean the thing about my view, you know, in Israel, for anyone who doesn't know what the horseshoe effect is, you know, basically, the horseshoe effect is a term for, you know, when you look at the political spectrum. You look at people who are really, really far left and people who are really, really far right. And if you actually compare the two, they're not that much different. Almost like a horseshoe, they're closer to each other in ideology and practice than they are to the political center. Well, you know, on one extreme, you have, you know, the you know, people who can't stand, you know, Israel. But instead of taking, you know, a moderate, okay, we're going to just defend ourselves, we're not going to act like full-on assholes, you know, route. The state of Israel's gone to the complete opposite end of that horseshoe, you know, and they're closer to, you know, they're closer in practice to the people, you know, who's hostile to them. To them.
And I think one of the most sick
and black and black morality, pretty much. Black and black morality.
I think one of the things that I found most disturbing was that aggregation of tweets over at MondoVice that showed all those little Israeli teenage girls screaming for genocide on Twitter.
That was just... I heard.
Hey, Haley.
Hey. I'm sorry I didn't have my microphone open. I just came in a little late.
It's all right. It's all right. So did you finish listening to? I gotta ask. Did you finish listening to the Terry Gross piece with the three trans people?
Yes, I did. And it, to me, my opinion of that piece was it was too much trans 101. And how I put it on Twitter this morning, I compared it to, I had a flashback to my Baptist days where the preacher would talk about where they were talking about. It was milk and meat, and there was way too much milk in that presentation and not enough meat.
Well, there was, it struck me as being, well, it was below the standards I generally expect of Terry Gross. Is that okay? Because I admire her.
Yeah, I generally like her. I don't listen to her every day, and I don't even listen to her every week, but, you know, every once in a while I'll catch her show. It seems like it's the same old questioning. And it seems like the people that interview trans people, they can't get away from the Donahue-type questions. I was half expecting somebody, oh, which bathroom do you use when you go to the... You have to go do a number two.
Yeah, please. I don't get the. And this is especially noteworthy inside the right wing, Haley. I don't get the potty fascination. I just don't.
I don't either. But it's all about. It goes back to control. It's back to male supremacy. Back to. Supremacy of cisgender white straight people, and it's privilege, and that's one way to enforce privilege is to have these customs.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, I'd like to potentially shift gears. Not shift gears here. Maybe stand up for a white male, seeing as how I am one.
Yeah. Lots of us here.
You know. Yeah. There are some questions about trans folks, and I was a dear friend, and we, you know, the closeness of the contact. We lost when we moved away. Still consider him a friend. It was a female to male. And I used to golf with him probably, once a week or so when the opportunity came. We'd go visit each other at the house. You know, it was almost like being another brother. But, you know, there are questions like that that just come up in curiosity. And there's no malice, at least from my point. But there are questions of, you know, well, you know, how do you do this? Well, you know, going to the bathroom is one that was brought up. I mean, just out of curiosity. I mean...
Well, you're asking it much more honestly, Todd, than a lot of people do. Is that fair to say, Haley?
Yes, and I agree with that.
Todd and Tristan were great friends. I mean, they shared a great friendship. So, I'm sorry, Todd, if I jump in here, but so as friends, this was a conversation as friends, dear friends, you know, in trying to understand what changes Tristan had to make and do in that process, you know. So it was, he shared as well, you know. I mean, he shared a lot with Todd, and he was a great friend. Actually, Tristan was Holly, and Holly was my friend. And Todd met Tristan through me. So, and they became great friends. So that's, I mean, it came from that level of caring friendship.
Oh, yeah. The way you describe that relationship, Kathy, is lovely in its own right. I guess I'm sensitized to it by watching all the hissies that the right wingers have had, especially over the fact that California is trying to make forward strides in treating people as people instead of trying to define people by gender, and then going from there. Make any sense?
Right. Yes, absolutely. I mean, I guess I just I'm just beyond it, you know. Personally, I mean, I'm at, you know, looking at people just as people. Make your choices, and I just want people to be happy. That's the, you know, just like with Tristan. I mean, it's, I can tell you a cute little story. I mean, I knew Tristan for years and years. And when we first met, I tried to get Holly to be girly, and it wasn't going to happen. It just wasn't. You know, I finally had to say, okay, this isn't going to happen. But that was part of Tristan's process as well. You know, he went through a really long process, but as a friend of his in that process, I had to see, oh my gosh, what am I, you know, that's not very nice of me. But it was a learning experience for me as well. So kind of just, you know, we saw the whole process, or I saw the whole process of not being happy and trying to figure himself out and all of that. And in part of that process, Todd came in and they became really close friends. So just to explain that level of friendship and how we learned, I guess we learned with our friend Tristan, the hard parts and the fun parts and all of that, you know, the newness of it, being who they need to be. Sorry I jumped in, Todd.
No, that's
don't
awesome.
You dare apologize.
Yeah, stop it.
I just wanted to explain the relationship.
Yeah, because
it was a very long relationship, and we still get in touch, but we don't get to see each other very much, or we haven't seen each other in a long time.
And, you know, I mean, in likewise, the questions came the other way, too. Like I say, it was female to male, so, you know,
yes.
When this happens, you know, how do you shave, or which direction do you shave, or, you know, just questions like that. And, you know, mine would go the other way of, well, how do you actually stand up to pee? And so you don't attract attention to yourself when you go to a bar, you know, so, you know, a lot of questions that are asked, are not necessarily coming from a vicious and vile place from all people, but from some people, as you know, Bob, you said, from, you know, the Republicans having Republicans having such a fit over it. Yeah, those people should just, no, I can't say that. But
lighten up.
Well, okay, that's a.
Or they could also shut them up.
You're getting closer, but yes, exactly. So anyway, I just, you know, wanted to throw my 2 cents worth, which ended up being about a $5 bill worth in. But okay, I'll shut up now. Please continue.
No, you're doing fine.
I appreciate the comment and also one from the lady there. But it seems like in most media presentations of trans people are always a trans 101, and it never goes into in depth on other issues. Employment. I know it was a book. It was a book tour piece, and the people were promoting the book, and it was that sort of media interview. But it seems that in some respects, the questioning hasn't seemed to evolve much from the days of Donahue and Geraldo when he was on daytime TV years ago. And I recall some years ago, about 20 years ago, when I was working second shift, waking up and I flipped the idiot box on, and there was some Geraldo show he was doing on drag queens who also are petty hoods. I thought, what is this crap?
I think Geraldo had a fascination with him, didn't he? He's kind of like the old mayor of New York.
Rudy.
Yeah, I think Rudy had a few dresses in his closet, and also reminds me, did y'all ever hear the story of Sam Walls of the Walls coverall empire?
No,
never did hear.
Oh, he was going to run for a seat in Texas on the Texas legislature, and he won his primary. He was run as Republican. He was ran as a family values type, not a hard family values type Republican, but he was. Except there was some old pictures of him and his wife at a cross-dressing convention that popped up between the time of the first primary and the runoff, and he got outed, and he lost the runoff, and what was interesting, instead of owning up to who he was, he said, well, that was just part of my past, and blah, blah, blah.
Is that, well, no, go ahead.
I was just going to say, Walls meets is a good pair of insulated coveralls. Boy, when you're working in cold weather, they were really good.
There might be a little irony. There might be a little irony at work there, Sparky. Given what Haley just described, he made coveralls. Okay, maybe not my best effort.
I had to go work in a town that was really cold, and the only place to buy anything was Walmart, so I had to break down and go in there and get a pair, and there was, says Walls right on it. It's kind of like a Carhartt thing too. They got their own little label.
I grew up with Liberties. Liberty overalls.
Well, we had Tough Nut and a couple others.
Good pair of overalls is much to be cherished.
Yeah, and speaking of clothing, this is kind of one more item about the clothing. I posted an article. I found an article. This was on one of the Facebook pages of I frequent, called Stuff Fundies Like.
I saw that.
That was just, it wasn't from that page. It was a link that he had. And a little background, the guy who does that blog and does the Facebook page went to Pensacola Christian College, which is an ultra, uber-conservative, independent Baptist college. And he's kind of got out of that. And it's sort of like his, he posts some really interesting things about that, from that life, and some of the more humorous and then some of the really bad things that's happened. But this was sort of along the humorous, and it wasn't a parody. This woman had a website and some website, and he found a link to it, and he posted it. It was some blog, and she had written this blog about how to take men's board shorts and make modest skirts for swimming. I'm not kidding you.
I read that and just laughed. Why doesn't she just go to burkasrus.com? But what I found interesting out of all of that, Haley, was the reference to we try to remain modest and make sure we don't get near anyone who isn't.
Yes.
So much for Jesus walking among the undesirables. I'm guessing they're not going to cross the road to help the man beaten by the side of the road like the Good Samaritan did. You know, he's naked and all beat up. That's not very modest.
Oh, that's that goes. Oh, I thought the Great Commission talked about going out and witnessing. No, not unless they're not modest and so forth. It's kind of like those who talk. I sometimes think if the Bible had been written today, it would not say go into the world. It would say go ye into the world and cast out the abortion providers and jail the gays.
Well, that's the one the fundies are reading anyway, Haley.
Oh yeah, and carry an AR-15 while doing so.
Yeah, take up thy AK-47 and follow me.
Yeah, they take up thy sword, and that's the interpreted sword is a semi-automatic AR-15 with a banana clip.
Can I jump in for a second?
Jump.
I just made a comment in the chat room about that I like to wear bibs. You know, we were talking about overalls. Because they are comfortable, and I put large hotel pants. And Kathy's going, huh? And Jan's going, what are hotel pants?
Well,
your answer is a large ballroom. Small hotel pants have no ballroom.
Thank you.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that's funny.
TMI.
It's like those Duluth commercials. Those are hysterical.
Oh, that's the thing with Sparky. You think, you know. Just and then the punchline, and you and it's kind of like when Dr. Bill brings the axe handle. Oh, I got a fun one for us. Y'all might enjoy this. From time to time, I've mentioned a woman by the name of Sandy Rios. She's
disgusting.
Yes, she is.
She is a real pig.
She is now mad at, and I'm going to run some audio. If y'all don't hear it, at least the folks out there in the interweb tubes land will. She's mad. She, like ever so many fine, upstanding Bible-believing Christians, is disgusted with those little children from Central America. Let's just see how this goes.
Our border agents, of course, are catching these diseases, as you heard the border agent say just a few minutes ago. And, of course, they are going to be transmitting. They can't help but transmit these diseases to the population. That's our children. You know, I think of biblical times. The lepers were separated, right or wrong, they were separated. It was understood that leprosy was so contagious. So there's nothing wrong with wanting to separate your children. We used to quarantine people when they had diseases. We have been such a healthy people for so long, we have forgotten what it's like to be diseased and to die from those diseases in huge numbers. But we're going to learn, I think, again. In fact, we know now that the TSA is actually allowing illegals to fly in the same planes that you and I fly in without any verifiable ID, any whatsoever. They don't even have a photo on the forms they're using. It's just their notice to appear forms, which in many cases they're doing by Skyping with these illegal immigrants on the border because they can't keep up with all of them. So they're able to get on airplanes and fly. They are given more privileges than American citizens. And the concern that I have read before this is, how do we know about lice and disease before they get on public transportation?
Who wants to go first?
From what hole did she pull all that bullshit out of?
It's the fetid swamp of swirling aqueous matter that sloshes around between her ears and passes for brains. But she really did. That woman who tells the world she's a Christian compared immigrant children to lepers. Lepers. And one of the interesting things about that is that, now, maybe I'm wrong, but I read somewhere along the way that we don't even necessarily know what the disease was that is referred to as leprosy in the Bible. Does that have any resonance with anybody?
Not with me, because I never read the Bible.
Good for you. You are so lucky. There was a disease that was one of the few diseases that was known in the Western Hemisphere, and of course this is all pre-1492. What was it? Leishmaniasis or something, caused by a fly or something. But she said, it's so contagious. Is leprosy really? Nice one. Bring it up again. We'll vote on it. is it so virulently contagious? I mean, there some of these right wingers are out there hollering, we're going to wind up with Ebola in America because of them little Guatemala children.
And they don't even know what Ebola is.
No, because it's from Stanford.
I mean, they find a soccer jersey and they declare it's a Muslim prayer rug. It's an Adidas Arsenal soccer jersey. Well, Muslims play soccer, don't they?
I'm ashamed.
Muslims, not Muslims.
Yeah, Muslims.
Muslins.
Yeah, there's Muslins.
But yeah, I mean, and it's not only that, you know, them evil socialistical, communistical Europeans play soccer too.
Anybody know where soccer originated?
Britain.
Weren't native peoples playing something similar to it here? Same as with lacrosse.
Mines were playing a form of basketball, weren't they?
Yeah, but it was equally akin to soccer.
Well, I thought they used their hips or shoulders, and the ball was really small.
It was a hard rubber ball made of wrapped strips of rubber. And, yeah, you could touch it with your knees, your hips, or your elbows, and I think maybe your head, but you could not touch it with your hands or your feet. And there were goals at either end of the court, but there were rings up on the sidewalls, and if you could propel it through the ring, it was an instant win.
and it wasn't like a basketball hoop. It's turned vertical, wasn't it?
No, it was, imagine a basketball hoop and now rotate it through 90 degrees.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
With regard to Sandy Rios, a note coming in from Jessica, subject line, idiot. You know, for someone who received money for her foster family girls, I'm sure she had to deal with lice or other little nasties before. Oh, God. Yeah. These people. Note came in from our buddy Steve in China. Walgreens, going back to the Walgreens story, Walgreens has, among numerous other allegations of fraudulent criminal conduct, been barred by the DEA for allegedly failing to maintain proper controls over the shipment of oxycodone prescriptions from its Jupiter, Florida distribution center. Statistics, according to the feds, indicate that some communities in the state were prescribing 10 times and more of the drug than any other such facility in the nation. One small town, population about 35,000, was prescribing 1 million pills a year compared to more typical figures of 70,000 or so. DEA claimed that 52 pharmacies serviced by the Jupiter facility were among the top 100 purchasers in the state. I guess what I'm suggesting, Steve says, is something like a common pattern. A company that gets involved in what amounts to drug trafficking is eventually going to unburden itself of the commoner nuisances of paying taxes, serving the interests of its customers, and so forth. Only thing I can't figure out, why did Rush Limbaugh have to send his housekeeper to the parking lot for a drug pickup? Walgreens, you know, is at the corner of healthy and happy. Disclosure, I'm a Florida native, and yeah, I love the name Jupiter. Thanks, Steve. Oh, and thanks very much going out to Texas T from the chat room for helping out this evening, and to our good pal of longstanding, Marty. We have taken the we've taken the evening's fundraising goal down to $165. Thank you very much. I'm very sure that Marty and Texas T and Sal would love a little company. Oh, okay. We've got a retraction and apology coming in. That was Sandy Rios in that clip. Jessica Nutting. Oopsie, I thought that idiot was Michelle Crazy Eyes Bachman from your audio. The femme crazies are beginning to sound all the same to me. Well, they all say the same things. Well, those little Guatemalan children, I mean, we love babies when they're in the womb and everything, because Jesus loves them when they're in the womb. But, you know, when they become little babies living in Guatemala, you know, they're just like lepers. And Marty points out, once again, Sandy Rios shows the world an example of Americans in our full flower, and we wonder why they hate us. Yeah. And by the way, I did look it up real quick. Leprosy, as opposed to being terribly, terribly, terribly contagious, leprosy is a chronic infection brought on by the bacteria Mycobacterium leprae and Mycobacterium lepromatosis. So it is curable. And this woman's knowledge of science never extended past the freaking Bronze Age. So just so we know. But there are, in fact, still more than 1,000 leper colonies in India. There are hundreds of leper colonies in China and on the whole of the African continent. God almighty. And
well, you know...
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry, Bob.
No, go ahead.
Well, it always makes me wonder, how much of what she says is ignorance, how much is hate, and how much is just ginning up that base? Get them all riled up so they tune in tomorrow.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. And by the way, one of the things that's most interesting is it turns out that the children coming from Central America are more likely to be vaccinated than American children.
True.
The goddess of irony strikes again.
Mm-hmm. And just what I'm reading here, no one really knows how leprosy is transmitted. But we do know that humans can get leprosy from armadillos. The article I'm looking at does say leprosy is not known to be either sexually transmitted or highly infectious after treatment.
But we know how contagious it is.
People at the highest risk for having leprosy generally come from areas with polluted water. Hello, West Virginia. And poor diet, or people with compromised immune systems.
Yeah, about that armadillo thing. Yeah, that's the reason, you know, that our armadillos are very common around these here parts, and I stay well clear of armadillos because of that, you know.
I never read. Wow. I mean,
You actually can. There have been cases of people who, there actually have been cases of people who have caught leprosy by handling, the thing doesn't even have to, you know, bite you or anything. No, handling an armadillo, you can get leprosy.
Right, and because that, you just take in the bacterium that way. But wait, just hold on a minute. Are there armadillos in the Middle East?
I don't actually. Let me look that up because I know I know that they're you know.
I mean, you'd think it would be, and yea, verily, the disciples were walking with Jesus one day, and Simon Peter did say unto him, Lord, looky there at that armadillo, stay thee away, lest thou get the leprosy.
Maybe armadillo or shellfish.
Keep working, Todd. You'll get there.
That wasn't Todd.
Oh, okay. Oh, John. Oh, sorry.
That's okay. Todd had to step away.
Okay. Well, we won't give him credit for that one-liner then. Is that you, John? Yes, Park.
I just want to make an announcement. The other day, Paul Carruthers, if he's listening out there, he sent me some money. You know, I haven't used my PayPal account in a long time. So I re-registered the other day, and I just sent that money he sent me to you.
Oh, wow, that's what that was. Okay, well, thank you to Paul then, and thank you, Sparky, for being the transmitters. We are now down to $120 to go for fundraising this evening. That's awesome. Thank you.
I just looked it up, and no, there are no armadillos outside of North and South America.
Well, it must be one of those miracle. No, it's a demon armadillo, Sergi. Mm-hmm. Just ask Pat Robertson. Maybe one of your ancestors had a demonic armadillo.
Yeah, I remember when I was riding my moped down East 4th Street, when there was roadkill armadillo splattered all over the road. I turned around and took a different route. It's just, that's not how concerned, because, you know, I first learned that from my cousins when I was a kid, that you can get leprosy from handling armadillos. And, you know, because, you know, being a kid outside and playing in a suburban neighborhood in Fort Worth, Texas, you see armadillos. And I was like,
well, and they're kind of cute.
Yeah, I would go and try to pet the things, and my cousins would tell me, no, you can get leprosy from those things.
Now, this, speaking of cute, though, the cutest thing I've seen in a very long time was video I saw from some aquarium in Australia, where you can go and get in the water and play with little platypuses.
Platypi.
I suppose. But they just look like the most adorable little things in the world.
they look like it. They, like dolphins, though, platypi can be quite mean.
I guess these are babies or something.
Even the babies, I mean, it's like, you just, I mean, they can be real sweet, but they can also be monsters.
Now you're making me think of Tasmanian devils.
Why for you try to bury me in the cold, cold ground? And rabbits.
Oh, God, I cherish the hours and hours I spent watching all of those Warner Brothers cartoons.
Oh, there's a link I found I should send you.
Oh, yeah?
It has all the Bugs Bunny stuff on it.
Oh,
post it in this chat room here on the Skype and Anhorn chat.
Oh, cool. I'll be able to get it when you get it. I can't do much with the Skype chat from where I'm sitting. And just to add to the general topic of let's see how much the right-wingers can despise innocent little children, let's check in with Texas's own, sorry, Sergi, representing Steve Stockman, who showed up on a right-wing internet TV show. No, wait. No, okay, no, that wasn't... I was thinking about Edward calling in last night and saying, oh, my God, there's this network that's on my cable system, but I don't think this is that one. This is a different one. No, it's a short little clip. The screaming hopefully will be minimal. And see what Steve Stockman's got to say.
Well, now that you're back in D.C., how is Congress going to protect American towns from what's essentially an illegal invasion?
There are more people coming across the border than those that we sent in an invasion of France. Let me say that again. There are more people coming across the border than invaded France in World War II. That is an invasion of our nation, and most of them are coming across into Texas. They came as an invasion in this nation when Obama declared permission that would be granted under what was called the DREAM Act. The DREAM Act basically said, if you're here, we'll allow your citizenship. Now, when it got down to Central America, they misinterpreted that, and they realized, the drug smugglers realized, if they grab these kids, in some cases it seems like kidnapping, especially after what I saw firsthand, where a little girl was crying, saying she wanted to go home. They took action, and they sent them north, and they sent them north primarily on the promise of the DREAM Act. And you can look at the numbers. As soon as President Obama announces the DREAM Act, the numbers shoot through the roof of illegal immigrants.
So you don't think these are refugees in the sense that they're running from something? You think they're running towards?
No, there's more cities have a higher murder rate than Guatemala in the United States. Does that mean we're going to get refugees from Chicago?
And thanks, of course, to our good friends at Right Wing Watch for that.
Speaking of someone
refugees from Chicago...
Yeah, because he says that some cities have higher murder rates in the U.S. than Guatemala does.
Oh. And speaking of someone who's unfortunately all too familiar with Steve Stockman, I mean, he's so dadgum dumb, ignorant, he couldn't, stand in a parking lot puddle lest he drown.
I have a friend who is his cousin. And she apologizes every time I see her. We're sorry. We couldn't do anything about him. Go ahead, Spark.
He couldn't even describe the D-Day invasion to you. He probably doesn't even know the beaches.
You mean Gold and Sword and Omaha and Utah and...
Juno.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, there are more children coming to the United States... It's just D-Day all along the Rio Grande. Or as they pronounce it in Ohio, Rio Grande.
Well, they're like mine.
We do not.
Do to.
Do not.
Do to.
Rio Grande.
No, no, no.
No, we don't.
Yes,
no.
You do. Yes, you do, Kathy. No.
Who's you?
Ohioans. Rio Grande University.
Rio Grande.
Mm-mm. Ask him. Where you go to school, kid? Rio Grande.
Oh, jeez.
Look, West Virginia's got to get some relief once in a while. I had to toss that out there.
Okay. I guess.
Well, I tried to go to Hay Fork U, but they wouldn't take me.
Darn.
And you were gonna join that fraternity Kappa Keg a day?
Yeah, at least.
I thought it was Wee Tappa Kagan.
That's a joke around here because we have a little town up in the mountains called Hay Fork.
Hay Fork only has one topic of instruction.
Have you ever heard the term Hay Fork U before, Roger?
No, I haven't, but I'm sure that Hay Fork U only has one topic of instruction. How to divert water from creeks.
Hey, Roger, how's it going? Garden's looking great.
Well, I planted some more stuff today, but I'm going to market and selling a little bit, and I didn't catch the first couple hours, but I made a point to come in for tonight.
Glad you did. I saw some photos just the other day on Facebook, and that was some lovely-looking lettuce I was looking at.
Yeah, well, there's lettuce and beets and broccoli and kohlrabi and green beans and, you know, all kinds of shit. And
you do Brussels sprouts?
No, Brussels sprouts take too goddamn long to grow. I mean, most of the stuff I grow, I try to get three crops in a season. And Brussels sprouts, I can only do one crop on a square foot of dirt. So they don't make me that much money.
Well, but I know you're a genius pickler, and I was just at there is nothing finer than pickled Brussels sprouts.
Oh, I've eaten pickled Brussels sprouts. They are great. But pickled asparagus is good. Sauerkraut and kohlrabi is good. Sauerkraut and carrots are good.
Wait. When you sauerkraut the carrots, do you shred them?
No, you make them into like quarter inch stalks, you know, quarter inch sticks, and salt them down and add a little cabbage sauerkraut juice into it and put it in the jar and put a ferment lock on it and let them go.
Wowzer. Because I'm thinking sauerkrauted carrots, you know, shredded like kraut is. I'm thinking that'd be pretty damn special, too.
Well, I mean, I'm sure you could do it shredded. I just haven't done it that way.
Yeah, it seems kind of labor-intensive, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, food processors make a whole lot of stuff easier.
Too true.
I mean, for my apple juice, I lost it. That's a whole long story. But you get a kitchen counter, you cut a hole in it like for a drain for the sink, and you buy yourself a garbage disposal, and you mount it in the countertop, not in a sink, but in the countertop. And when you have your apples, you just cut them up and throw them through that garbage disposal, and let it go into a 5-gallon bucket, then put it in the press and press out your apple juice.
Oh, that's genius.
And you get a whole lot more juice than the old little, you know, the spindle that's got the little pieces of metal coming off of it to shred in the cabbage, the normal cider number. But running them through a garbage disposal, you get a lot more juice.
Oh, that just sounds yummy. So do you go on and cider it after that, or?
Well, you can make a hard cider after that. I don't make hard cider because somehow up here every time I've tried to make hard cider, it turns out I may as well be making vinegar. So I just make juice, and then I make jelly out of the juice mixed with the raspberries and the red currants and the blackberries and all of that.
Oh, man. With a little cream cheese on a bagel? Whoa. Well, you got me going. There's our food porn segment for the evening.
Anyhow, I just want to tell you I enjoyed your little chat last night with Mike. And on top of that, and I heard it on Tom Hartman today, but the thing about the Malaysian plane that got shot down, blah, blah, blah. The Peruvian press yesterday was talking about Putin was flying home from South America, flew over the same area, was about 10 minutes off the timeline, and maybe they were trying to shoot Putin down because the insurgents in the Ukraine started out being a separatist movement, and then Putin came in and sucked them back into Russia, and there's some unrest about trying to get sucked into Russia, and maybe those folks were really trying to get Putin. And it sounds really bizarre, but if you give some time to think about it,
what was he doing?
Might have a germ of truth.
What was he doing in South America?
The World Cup. He was down for the finals of the World Cup.
But that was over on Sunday.
Yeah, and he spent a little time hanging around, and he was flying back yesterday to the Soviet Union.
Well, he was supposedly on the phone to Obama when the
And
Obama
you can't be on a phone on an airplane?
Well, yeah, you can, because Air Force One has one.
Anyhow, just another question, theoretical, conspiracy, bullshit kind of number to put out there.
That's fascinating.
But you probably won't see it on American media.
I saw some mention of it earlier today, but not in that level of detail.
All right, I heard it on Tom Hartman when Tom Hartman had the Russian expert he brings on every once in a while, and my wife caught it in Peruvian newspapers yesterday because she reads Peruvian newspapers to her father every day. He's living with us, blah, blah, blah. But anyhow, she reads the Peruvian press every day to her father, and it came up yesterday in the Peruvian press. And I've not heard it on any local, national news here in the United States as a possibility other than on Tom Hartman. Now my wife's waving her hands at me. I've got to deal with this. Yeah.
Good enough.
Yeah, I'll do them on the barbecue. Oh, sorry, I forgot to flip up the microphone.
That's okay. It's probably going to be delicious.
Yeah, we're having sausages, sauerkraut, mashed potatoes, gravy, German dinner.
Oh, be still my heart.
But we eat at 6:45, and it's only 5:22, so I got some time.
Gas or charcoal?
I don't know. If I sit here and bullshit, it'll be gas. If I go do something, it'll be charcoal.
Yeah, I already know what I'm having for dinner. I got a coupon to my email inbox today. Taco Cabana wished me a happy birthday and offered me a free meal. I'll print it out that coupon and right after the show ends. There's a Taco Cabana less than a fourth of a mile away from here, so I'm going there. And
good stuff, Sergi.
Oh, great stuff.
Oh, by the way, Sergi, Marty passed along happy birthday wishes to you and said to please tell you that he shares this day, you share this day with his brother, with Marty's brother, Mike.
Well, thanks, Marty. I definitely appreciate the wishes.
Yeah, Marty pointing out by email, but also going back to the Steve Stockman quote, I thought the DREAM Act was for those children of undocumented immigrants who were already here, which is true. And that's why Steve Stockman said, well, you know, we got that DREAM Act, and they just didn't understand it right down in Central America and started sending all their children up here.
It really bothers me that so many of these right-wing assholes think everybody who doesn't live in the United States of America is a dumb fuck. Those people living in Central and South America are as intelligent as anybody else. And they're not mistaking anything. They know because of the law that was passed, what, 2006, 2008, if you're not a child from an adjacent country, you get assigned a lawyer, you have to go to a judge, and you can claim political asylum. And that's what they're here. They're not here as illegal aliens. They're here as refugees. And it really pisses me off that the media is calling them illegal immigrants and not refugees. We can deal with refugees from Sudan. We can deal with refugees from Iraq or Iran or Kurdistan or whatever. But as soon as some kid wants to cross the border into the United States, we can't call him a refugee. And this whole thing goes all the way back to Ronald Reagan and Ollie North. And it just, I get wild on this. Sorry, folks, for the
No, no, no. Don't apologize. I think it is more than merited.
And then we have the boat people from Vietnam. Oh, yeah.
But remember, our foreign policy and our immigration policy is so screwed up that if these little Guatemalan children and El Salvadoran children and Honduran children could simply be coached to say, I am Cuban, everything goes away.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Dry feet Cubans are instantly accepted.
And isn't that just a little squirrely?
A little hypocritical, but the news media won't tell it like it is.
Amazing how they're not out to change that law.
Oh, no, no, no. And you never hear a right-winger complaining about Cuban immigrants.
Sorry about the Larry thing.
That's okay. Oh, we got a great crowd in the chat room this evening.
Yeah, I'm doing my routine. I'll be on in a second.
Tim just jumped in. Tim from L.A.
Yeah, I wonder if he's home.
I don't know. Sailor Chick's in the room this evening. There's Kelly.
Bob?
Yes.
I wanted to mention that. First of all, I wanted to mention to Roger that there was a meeting last week of the California Democratic Party, and they discussed primarily Prop 45 and 46.
I caught your conversation with Bob earlier on that.
Okay, 45 and 46. I also talked to Bob Mulholland, and I asked him about the AIC Act, and was talking about the Disclose Act, and he said that there probably would be no time to push the AIC Act at the Democratic Party meeting because of they were too concerned about 45 and 46. The other thing I wanted to ask the group about is apparently there was a journalist from NBC that was sent home because he photographed or reported about five children that were killed by Israelis, and I want to know if that, in fact, was the case. The other thing I was reading, that a woman in upstate New York down by Syracuse was put in jail for a year because she was at an anti-drone protest, and that happened a few days ago on the 14th. Because I read about that on one blog, and then Institute for Public Accuracy, which is actually Norman Solomon's group, you know, the FAIR group, Fairness and Accuracy and Reporting, you know, they talked about that. And, well, that's about it.
I don't know anything about any of them.
Okay.
I'm spending too many hours a day in the garden and going to farmer's market.
I have a feeling that's quite mentally healthy, Roger. I wouldn't apologize.
Well, I listen to the radio and I work in the garden and I get dirty every day, and that's my life.
Bob, what do I say to the abortion supporters that will say, "Well, if a woman doesn't have to get an abortion"? Now I've heard Mike's position on this, and I believe it. and I've heard your position on this, and I believe it, but I have some friends that will say, well, a woman doesn't have to get an abortion because that woman, those babies can always be put up for adoption. There are plenty of people that would be willing to adopt a baby that a woman doesn't want to take care of. And secondly, they tell me that there are too few people in the world. We need more people in the world.
Well, on that second one, they're just nuts, Larry. I mean, call somebody to chase them down with a big butterfly net. This planet is ridiculously overpopulated. And you know, we see the effects of it all around us. As to the first part, you know, that whole line of argument just, and these are anti-abortion people you're talking to?
These are people that that believe that, they're not in favor of abortion. As you know, Mike will say, and my friends will say, no woman wants to have an abortion, but that's an issue.
Yeah, no, that's not true. Lots of women want to have an abortion, okay. And it's okay. I guess I'm one of the few people out there that will holler hooray for abortion. Okay, because I believe it. Well, there's that word. I know it is a woman's choice. I know I have no business messing around with any woman's decision about whether or not to reproduce, and to argue that. Well, she can always give it up for adoption. I'm sorry, you have to do the stupid cornpone voice for that. Ignores the agency of the female half of the species. Women are more than baby machines. They are more than life support systems for uteri. Okay, that's 9 months of her life in which her life is in jeopardy. And I'm not yelling at you, of course, Larry.
Not only that, up here in Humboldt County, we have an outfit called CASA, C-A-S-A, which is Court-Appointed Special Advocates, which has to do with all the kids that are in foster care. You can become a volunteer and be their surrogate representative through the judicial system, because there are so many more kids that are not being adopted that exist in this world.
Yeah,
I mean,
because
the
nobody
idea that you can pop a baby out and give it away to somebody does not exist.
No, it doesn't. And what's more, there are plenty of children desperately in need of adoptive homes, but most privileged families that are unable to have children, they don't want some 4-year-old. They don't want some 6-year-old that's been removed from a home because daddy was beating them with the belt. They want a nice, pristine, newborn white baby.
Well, not necessarily white. Maybe from India or Africa or Afghanistan or something, but still wearing diapers.
Yeah.
Well, that clarifies an issue. I just brought that up for discussion because I'm most likely to believe in your position, Bob. But I also have to try to be open, even if I'm open to the point of being foolish, which I have shown in the past, you know, to be so open to people that I actually allow, you know, foolish perspectives to enter. That
no, you're willing to engage in dialogue and to consider the other side. It's too darn bad that the right wing aren't, because for them it's their way or the highway.
Yeah, well, my doctor was saying that here in Berkeley, we all believe one way, but if I go to West Point, where the military academy is, they're just as single-minded at West Point in New York as we are in Berkeley about our particular position. So I don't know how to make, you know, I don't know how to make heads or tails out of that, but. That's what.
There is progressives at work at West Point.
Oh, okay, that's cool, Dunk.
Because I know somebody's wife that works there.
Oh, cool.
And I've been to West Point.
That's cool. Thank you. Thank you very much.
By the way, one of the people I really admire over at Crooks and Liars is Caroli, or Caroli, I'm not sure. And she has a post today there. We've all talked about that proud son of Stanford, Brian Fisher, the guy with the helmet hair that thinks that Jesus hates grizzly bears. He's with the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi, Stan. And he's got a Twitter account. And as soon as it was announced that, and it is, it's a damned grief that one or two or more of the top HIV researchers on this planet were on that damn Malaysian air flight that got shot down. And President Obama made mention of that fact. I mean, this may set back HIV research by a generation. We don't know. So Brian Fisher, Caroli found this. Brian Fisher took to his Twitter and said, "Obama politicized deaths of AIDS researchers on Malaysian plane. We know how to stop AIDS. Persuade men not to have sex with men."
Oh, boy. That's really crappy.
And someone down in the comments, and I've seen this before, and it's just brilliant. "Only gay men get AIDS. Only gay men and Haitians get AIDS. Only gay men, Haitians, drug users, and blood recipients get AIDS. Only gay men, Haitians, drug users, blood recipients, bisexual men, heterosexual women, prostitutes, and heterosexual men get AIDS. Only gay men, Haitians, drug users, blood recipients, bisexual men, heterosexual women, prostitutes, heterosexual men, unsuspecting wives, pregnant mothers, babies, and famous actors get AIDS." And it just goes on like that, building and building and building.
Until the whole population.
And then at the end it says, "When are you going to get it?"
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Bob, I wanted to ask a technical
question. Why did you didn't bring up Magic Johnson and
Magic Johnson. Yeah. Bob, I wanted to ask a technical question before the 6 o'clock hour. And I would like to put together an interview show, some kind of interview show. And I asked about the equipment to be able to do it. But I need to know, do I need professional broadcasting equipment to be able to do a show that I can perhaps have on your, that you or somebody at the Horn can help me with? I mean, do I need a special microphone or a special board, something like that?
I think this would probably best be handled after hours or off air, but I've had that question from a lot of people. And no, you don't have to have everything we've got in here unless you want to do things like take lots of phone calls. There are ways to take a phone call in. I don't know. Is there, Sparky, is there a record function?
On Skype?
Yeah.
Not that I know of.
I'm not familiar with one either. So, and
third party apps that you can use to record Skype.
There are other questions I would have, Larry, that are based upon your own particular physical requirements. So, I don't know. I guess that's you'd like under the best of circumstances to have at least a small mixer and a decent quality microphone.
Okay.
And a computer that's got the enough processing and memory to do what you need to do.
Okay. Well, I apologize for breaking boundaries or for...
Oh, you didn't break any boundaries.
Well, you mentioned that it would be best for me to handle this off the air.
Well, that's only because there's lots of technical gobbledygook.
Okay. Yeah.
I'll send you a picture of... Oh, what's her name from radio or not?
Nicole
Sanders had pictures on Facebook of her setup today from that room.
Thank you very much.
You know, she had two laptops and a little small mixer.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you, Dunk. And thank you, Bob.
Oh, no worries. Hey, just real quick, we're 20 minutes before the end of the program. And we're $120 to go to be able to finish paying some rather critical bills at this point in time. So anybody wanting to help out, all help is much appreciated. $120 to go to finish the week, okay. PayPal button or traditional mail, however. PayPal button's at headonradionetwork.com. Yes, Sparky, go ahead.
I was going to ask Roger if he's seen that new promotion that Humboldt County's doing.
On what?
It's hooked on HumboldtCut.com.
No.
It's an outstanding little video that they put out on YouTube.
Yeah, you'll get a giggle.
Yeah, thanks for pointing out the Rural Caucus to me, Bob. The Rural Caucus is a really good group. That was a person who was on the chat last night when we were talking about caucuses and mentioned about the Rural Caucus of the Democratic Party, and there is one, and I'm sure that Roger was, well, I'm not sure of anything. I'd have to ask Roger, but I'm sure that he was a part of it.
I've been to the meetings. I would like to jump back to the Malaysian aircraft, and I was listening to Krell earlier today, and he was saying, I don't have the verification, that there were approximately 100 AIDS researchers on that flight on their way to a conference in Australia.
Yeah, that's what I had heard earlier in the day. Not one or two, but 100.
But 100.
That is true. That's true.
Okay. Thank you. Yep. I believe Betsy.
No, that was Kathy.
Oh, sorry, mm-hmm. Kathy.
That's
misunderstood
okay.
The
yeah.
voice.
They were going to a conference. So
now
that was my understanding.
Did the weirdos target Putin, miss the plane? Were they targeting the AIDS researchers for religiosity? I don't know.
Smart people fly internationally.
Like, well, so do dumb people.
Well, no, but you get people going to a conference, right? Like, no, there's nothing more to that. Respectfully.
Okay, fine. I just brought it out as something I heard.
No, I didn't mean to slam. I just, as soon as I heard that, I thought, oh, here we go. We're going to get a whole lot of Jonesian kind of stuff.
Oh, no, Roger is no Alex Jones. No, not by any stretch
well,
of the
no,
imagination.
I realize that, of course. But, you know, apparently that other plane that they never found had a whole lot of computer people on it. And I mean, well, you know, smart people travel internationally for business.
Yeah, one of the 9/11 planes had the head of one of the companies that was deeply involved in making the internet work. What was it? Kismet, AKISMET, or something like that. I remember with one of those people, like the CEO or something.
One of the 9/11 planes had the head of our National Seashore Wilderness Conservation Area here in Humboldt County on it.
And a scout for the Bruins.
Oh, hey, shall we move toward the wrap-up with a little bit of Sure Enough Stupid? A guy, and this comes out of Florida. Sorry, Florida folks. A man was charged with aggravated assault, I guess is what it would be. The guy was charged with stabbing another passenger on a bus as they exited in South Orlando. So the judge is arraigning the guy and is about to appoint, you know, and the guy doesn't have a pot to piss in, so he's about to appoint him a public defender. Here's the audio.
We're hearing from the man who witnesses say stabbed another man as he got off a Lynx bus in Orlando yesterday.
Now, Thomas Thorpe made his first court appearance this morning going on what some are calling a racist rant. Local 6's Eric Sandoval shows us what he said.
Witnesses say Thomas Thorpe got off at a Lynx bus stop a lot like this one and stabbed another passenger several times. They still don't know why he may have done it. But in front of a judge today here at the Orange County Jail, we got a better sense of who this guy is.
We have charges of attempted first-degree murder with a weapon, aggravated battery with a deadly weapon, robbery, carrying a concealed weapon.
The man standing there is Thomas Thorpe, now charged with stabbing a passenger.
That's kind of a video reference, makes audio, you know, never mind, anyway.
As he got off a Lynx bus. He surprised the judge today by refusing an offer to have a public defender represent him.
You understand what an attorney is and what they do?
Yeah, and who they screw, yes.
Thorpe then tried to speed through the rest of his appearance with a racial jab at the man who would be his public defender.
I said not guilty, pleaded not guilty, and I don't want this Negro standing next to me. Okay? I don't want a Negro standing next to me.
Thorpe then refused an offer by that lawyer to...
Nope, I want to do life. I want to be my own lawyer. I are a moron.
It's not too often I say, lock someone up and throw away the key, but... him? Yeah. Yep. Let's go ahead and put him under the pen.
Oh, he's going to be right at home.
The Darwin Award.
Oh, by the way, happy birthday, Sergi.
Yeah, Darwin Award indeed, Roger. Wile E. Coyote, super genius.
He'll be joining the Aryan Brotherhood in prison here in a few months.
Well, that was the first thing that came to mind. He's going to be right at home with the Aryan Brotherhood.
I'll tell you something. If I was in court and there was the Purple People Eater was the best lawyer in town, I'd let him represent me.
Sure. Do you understand what a lawyer... But did you catch that first line? Do you understand what a lawyer is? Yeah, they screwed us.
Mm-hmm.
Who's us? And when?
He kind of screwed himself by stabbing the dude on the bus.
Well, you got that part too, Sergi.
I mean, you know, I wish the goddess of irony would have granted, you know, granted I'm sure many people's prayers, including mine now. I wish that judge would have been African American judge.
Well, interesting you would mention that. Cranky old white guy being arraigned in Chicago called his judge Rosa Parks. Not kidding.
Is that supposed to be an insult?
The way he meant it, yes.
I was thinking that too, Sergi. Like, what?
I mean, you know, that would be like me getting mad at someone and calling them Gandhi. It's like, okay. Like, that's not really an insult.
Right.
Man accused of slapping, spitting on judge, calls her Rosa Parks. Accused of slapping and spitting on a 79-year-old judge. David C. Nicosia allegedly attacked Judge Arnett Hubbard twice for smoking next to him outside the Daly Center in Chicago on Monday. The judge called for assistance, and a 55-year-old doughy, pasty-faced white guy has four counts of aggravated battery and a hate crime on him, being held on $90,000 bail. Judge Arnett Hubbard is the first female president of the National Bar Association and the Cook County Bar Association, both of which are lawyer groups founded by people of color. He slapped her twice on the left side of her face with an open hand. He spit in her face after their ensuing argument. And it was all because she walked past him smoking a cigarette.
Well, he's going to get nailed for assault against a public servant. It's pretty much equivalent to hitting a cop. Yeah, we're not going to be seeing him again for a while, thank goodness.
Yeah, goodbye now.
Yeah, but I'm sure he didn't know she was a judge.
Well, it doesn't matter. I mean, if you... You know, at least here, and I don't know how the law works up in Illinois, but here in Texas, if you assault someone and they turn out to be any kind of a government worker, it doesn't have to be a cop. Assault against a public servant, it it does. It covers cops, it covers judges, it even covers, like, you know, there's giant signs on the Fort Worth city buses, you know, on the inside of the buses that say assaulting a bus operator is assault against a public servant and is a class, what is it, C felony?
Class C felony. Yeah. In California, if you assault a school teacher, it's a Class C felony, whether or not you knew the person was a school teacher.
Precisely. You know, so it's probably not much different in Illinois. He's going to get hit with that charge because she was a judge, which, you know, I'm all for this jerk's case.
And meanwhile, back down in the Miami-Dade area of Florida, because it's all, this is all, wow, what a country. Jose Fernandez went to, I guess, a county commission meeting. And he wore his anti-Agenda 21 t-shirt. Yeah, there are such things. And he said, I came here to tell you in public, if you sell my house, the bleep is going to hit the fan. And I'm going to board the entire house. I'm going to board the entire house with me inside. I dare you to sell my house. You've become tyrants. You've become a corrupted government. You've destroyed my family and hundreds of families. And I said, enough. I am the people. And the time that you sell the house, my constitution gives me the right to shoot every one of you. Shoot them. And points at every member of the county commission.
But wasn't he behind in his taxes?
$316,000 in the hole.
Sounds like Clive Bundy.
Mm-hmm.
No, he's a patriot.
So is Clive.
Absolutely.
Well, he only owes $1 million.
And then, also out of Florida, I guess we're going to wind up the evening in Florida. There's this. In a minute.
Did you do these things they accuse you of?
No, I didn't.
Well, what's your side of the story? Tell us.
Yeah, I don't have anything to say right now.
Why are they accusing you of this then?
Well, there's a lot of things involved, insurance, money.
Why are they trying to get insurance money from you?
Well, you're in a place like that, you want to sue somebody.
So you didn't do any of these, and all three women have the same story, though?
Yeah, all three women are friends.
I mean, it's pretty, they said that you wanted them to play rape scenes for them, that you were obsessed with having sex that was like rape. Is that true?
No comments.
What about the part where they say that they were afraid you were going to kick them out of the shelter if they didn't have sex with you?
You could believe all you want.
You just think all these three women have the same. That's a song.
Eyewitness News questioned a pastor.
Yeah, so the guy's a preacher, you know. And he's accused of raping women in a shelter that he ran. And as she questioned him about it, he grabbed her microphone and threw it and
but he just made bond.
Oh, did he?
Walked out the bailout door.
What?
She was waiting for him.
Yeah.
What a piece of shit that guy was.
Yeah, 44-year-old Pedro El Custodio calls himself Pastor Pete. And accused of raping three women who took shelter at Our Father's House of Refuge Ministries, Incorporated. What a country.
This is a preacher that was accused of raping
three other women, and then he went after the reporter.
Oh, boy. Help.
But he just posted bond, and they let him out.
Yeah, he made bail on three charges of rape.
And I just looked it up. It was only $30,000.
Yeah.
For rape. I mean, you know.
Well, that's $10,000 per rape.
Should have been $300,000.
And that means he paid a bail bondsman $3,000 to put up the bail, so he's out free for $3,000. Because you only have to put up 10%.
Right.
I mean, if they post $100,000, if they say you got $100,000 bail, you call up a bail bondsman, you put up 10%, which stays with the bail bondsman, you get to walk free.
Yeah, until he, you know, until they...
Until they sick dog the bounty hunter on you.
Well, or
no,
until...
That's true if he doesn't show up.
No, no,
but
no.
The bail bondsman still makes the 10% in his pocket to start out with.
But here's the fun part. Dude got popped for assault after that, which means he can have his bond revoked, which means revocation proceedings. I'm wondering if the bail bondsman was so willing to take the money the next time through. Don't know. I don't know how Florida law works.
The bail bondsman may be willing to take this time, but if the bail got revoked, the bail bondsman kept the $3,000. And that's profit to the bail bondsman.
Yeah, but isn't he? But the bail bondsman is the one who's on the hook for the full 30, isn't he?
Yes, but if he got rearrested and got put back into custody, that ends the liability for the $27,000. The bail bondsman still put the 30 in his pocket. Now, the next charge, there'll be another bail bondsman that's now on the hook for the rest of it.
Beautiful. Just beautiful.
Bail bond is an incredibly lucrative profession.
You just got to have the nut to get it started, right?
Yep.
Yeah, but if you look at where most bail bondsmen have their businesses, they're usually by the courthouse.
Well, that's where the people that need bail are around.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yep. I mean, you know, here in Fort Worth, the courthouse is on West Weatherford Street downtown, and up Belknap, up Weatherford, all the way northeast, all south, all directions, for like a mile radius, there's just bail bonds, just all over, because that's where the jail is.
The first time I ever even heard of a bail bondsman was when, as a kid, I went to see the very first Bad News Bears. Remember with Walter Matthau and Tatum O'Neill, and that little league team couldn't get a sponsor. Everybody was, you know, Joe's Car Lot and, you know, First Bank and, well,
Chico's
Bail Bonds, exactly, Sparky.
The only sponsor for the little league.
Yeah. Hey, we got to get out of here, but it sure has been a fun conversation, y'all. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Roger. Thanks, Haley. Thanks, Sparky. Thanks, Todd and Kath. Thank you, John. Thank you, Larry, for joining in. Thank you, Sergi, and especially happy birthday. It is always fun, our little Friday on the front porch conversations. Thanks to Sal and Marty and Texas T and Paul via Sparky for helping out with the fundraising this evening. We close the week $120 behind. Anyone who wants to close that gap is more than welcome so to do, and is much appreciated. Big bills got to be paid. I mean, you know, we're not even talking about Agnes's masseur anymore. So any help, the PayPal button, use it, please. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Texas Betsy, moderators in the chat room, Sparky, moderator in the chat room, as well as moderator of the Horn Malloy Skype chat. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Hey, thanks, John Fox, for all you do. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT, ACHEACT.org, ACACT.org. Go there. Help us bring an end to the agony of Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, one and all. The weekend rerun stream will be a compendium of everything that happened this week, so check it out if you missed anything.